With Spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop Spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
Have never seen that come down, you know, the way it came down, you know, as far as the collision between the umpire and the quarterback. The communication that I was given on the sideline, that they were reviewing it, they were going to put, you know, time back on the clock. And the next thing I know, that they're running off the field. We shouldn't have had any problem getting the ball spotted there. Is that the quote you're looking for?
Nobody comes in the game wanting or expecting to lose. I mean, in hindsight, yeah, I can say I could have went down sooner if I'd have known all of that was going to play out that way. But I also think if I don't get hit from behind, it's a clean, and we're clocking the ball with at minimum a second, if not more.
Penalties is just killing us down the stretch, and you know, it's something that, you know, we got to get it fixed. You know what I mean? So it's tough.
I believe
they were
aiming at the referees.
Yeah,
they were at the referees.
Credit to them, then.
That's what
it takes. Yeah,
they weren't doing it.
Oh, well, credit to them.
Monday edition of PFTPM. Look who's here. It's Mike and Mike in the afternoon. How about that? Mike Golic back again. Mike, I missed you this morning. Chris Sims was back because the Peacock postgame show is over for the season, but it's great to see you. Great to have you. I hope you're doing well. I know one thing. I know that you're not dealing with about 6 or 7 inches of snow right now like I am, and I'm going to make my way down to my barn tonight to watch the game, and I guarantee you I'm going to fall and I'm going to injure myself.
Oh, listen, there's no doubt you're going to fall and hurt yourself. That's a given, and you're right. While I was in the cold, I called the Cincinnati Raiders game, which, wow, what an atmosphere in Cincinnati for Westwood One. But it was cold there, and I saw the cold games yesterday, and I am back in the 70 degrees of Arizona and loved watching the rest of the football. The first game of the playoffs was the game I did. It was phenomenal. And boy, oh boy, did that second to last game with San Francisco and Dallas, that provided some interesting fireworks themselves.
And let's focus on that right away. First of all, I'm as big of a Dak Prescott fan as there is. Got a ton of respect for him. I love how he came into the league as a mid-round draft pick and bet on himself, didn't give in to the pressure from the Cowboys to take less money, always believed that he would achieve, ended up getting a great contract, came back from the horrific ankle injury, very well may win comeback player of the year. But when the officials are going off the field after that game yesterday and people are throwing stuff at him, I didn't like what he had to say. We played it right at the end of that first minute to start the show. And I don't know, there was a jokey aspect to it, but you got to have a bright line. When somebody buys a ticket to go to a sporting event, they in no way, shape, or form have any right, ability, privilege, whatever, to throw anything at anyone. And if they do, they should be banned for life. And it's not something that should be joked about. Stephen Jones made that very clear today. I was surprised that Dak said what he said yesterday, Mike.
1,000% agree. Listen, I know and we know that was a lot of frustration, right? A lot of frustration. But to your point, you've said it. I've said it for 2 decades on the show when I had one. Anybody who throws anything from the stands should never be allowed in that arena again, ever. And there should never be a joke about it. There's nothing funny about it. I did a college game this year in Tennessee where fans were doing that. Almost hit Lane Kiffin in the head with a golf ball, thrown from the distance it was, the damage it can cause. It's not funny and should never be joked about. And again, there's enough cameras to find those fans and ban them. So I would imagine, and I would hope, if he hasn't done it already, that Dak Prescott would come out and say, you know, he didn't mean what he said, or didn't. Hopefully people didn't take it that way. He'll find some way, I hope, to reverse what he said, because that was not something, even in the heat of frustration, which we've all been there if you play long enough, that didn't need to be said.
Yeah, he won't have a midweek press conference because obviously the Cowboys lost, but here's hoping he finds some way to make it loud and clear that he was wrong to say what he said and that no one who attends any sporting event should ever throw anything out onto the field. It can injure people. It can cause mayhem. It can cause problems. Right. And it's just not something that should be regarded as any way acceptable. But, as you mentioned, frustrations abound for the Cowboys. And Coach Dungy made a great point today on Twitter. Let's not get so caught up in what happened at the very end of the game, and we'll talk about that. But the fact that the Cowboys fell behind 23-7 is far more alarming in some respects than the way that they thought they could pull off a quarterback draw, a spike, stop the clock, and throw it to the end zone in the final seconds of the game. This is a team that was outclassed, and but for Jimmy Garoppolo doing the things that Jimmy Garoppolo sometimes does, Mike, the Cowboys would have never had a chance, and they got blown off the field on both sides of the ball. That's what should be alarming to the Cowboys. They ran into a brick wall yesterday that pushed them around for three quarters.
So what happens in a game like that, Mike, and you know, you've seen it, you've watched this, the game long enough, and I've been out there, is everybody focuses on the end of the game, and we'll do that. But there are at least a handful of plays during a game, and more in this one, that could have a cause to the outcome. They had 14 penalties. 14 penalties. You're the most penalized team in the league, and you lived up to it in the last game. So, there were other mistakes out there. Obviously, you know, not just Dak. The quarterback gets too much praise. The quarterback gets too much thrown at him as well, but we'll get into what he did at the end. And you're right. I mean, all for the overthrow in the Super Bowl by Garoppolo. He has an overthrow in this game that ends up leading to a touchdown for Dallas. You thought, because this was kind of like the game I did in Cincinnati. Cincinnati was in control, but the Raiders were just doing enough, or there were enough mistakes made on the other side to keep the Raiders in it. And that was the same thing here. The 49ers were controlling this game. That defensive line, they beat up on the offensive line of the Cowboys. They didn't run the ball well. They sacked Dak five times, which means they knocked him down twice as many times. That's usually what that means. And then the ridiculous amount of penalties that went on. 14 penalties. You know, and I know we're going to get into Mike McCarthy and how much is he to blame. These are professional athletes who get paid to play this game. You know what? If I jump off sides or I move before the ball is snapped or I get called for holding, you know what I'm not doing as a player? I'm not looking to the sideline and saying, Coach, that was your fault. That's my damn fault. I did it on the field. So there's a real, you know, you want to say a lack of discipline from the head coach in not shoring that up? Well, there's a lack of discipline from the players as well, committing all those penalties and leading the league in that category.
You know, I think there's so many layers and levels to it. You're bringing in players who lack the discipline. You're not instilling the discipline in them, and they ultimately aren't performing with discipline. One of the things we hear all the time from Bill Belichick, the Patriots head coach, how they try to minimize penalties, because they know what a difference that 5 yards can make, that 15 yards can make, that penalty that wipes out the quarterback sneak on fourth and short by the 49ers because Jimmy Garoppolo hurried to the line and freaked out, as Kyle Shanahan said today. I know that's the other team, but still, it's a lack of discipline. You need to instill it in your players. You need to have players who you can trust to have discipline. You need to make sure that they understand there's accountability for not being disciplined. Then ultimately, it's on them to go out and do it. You can't do it for them, but you pick the players and you coach the players as a team. And if you don't have guys who are sufficiently disciplined to avoid that over and over and over again, you got to look in the mirror and ask yourself, are we getting the right players?
Listen, I agree. You know, and there's a reason. Listen, I keep going back to the game I did, but the Raiders were the second most penalized team in the NFL. And everybody talks about coaching there. Well, how many coaches have they been through in the last decade or two? But they're always near the top. So maybe you have to look past that as well. Yeah, there's a reason. It is not just one person that you can look at and say that's your fault. Now, the head coach is the head coach, so he's going to get a lot of the brunt of it, which, you know, they know comes with the territory. But there is a whole lot of people, Mike, a whole lot of people that need to look in the mirror and say, okay, what are you doing? I mean, the fake punt, what a beautiful fake punt. But then you try and get him to jump off sides after that, and then you run your whole team off, and you know when you do that, there's going to be a substitution, so the rest going to stand on the ball. You run your team off too late to where you get a delay of penalty game. I mean, come on. I mean, and Cowboy fans are going to blame the refs. The refs did they did everything right in those instances in this game. The Cowboys have nobody to blame but themselves.
And before we focus on the last play of the game, you mentioned the fake punt, and then it worked. Then after that, they leave the punt team out there. They act like they're going to call a play. It is so obvious, and so obviously an effort by the Cowboys to do what was done to them by the Cardinals 2 weeks earlier when they got duped into wasting a timeout. And they didn't have that timeout when the time came to throw the red challenge flag late in the game when the Cardinals fumbled. It was so obvious that's what Mike McCarthy was trying to do, and it didn't work. So what happened? They gave up 5 yards of field position for nothing because they thought they could snooker Kyle Shanahan and company to taking a timeout. And I think Shanahan's smart enough to understand, I know exactly what's going on here, and I'm not taking this bait. I'm not eating this cheese. I'm going to make him take a 5-yard penalty. And we'll just go from there. But on that final play of the game, Mike, 14 seconds on the clock. Ball's just outside the 40-yard line of the San Francisco 49ers. The 49ers finally woke up to the fact that the Cowboys are working the sideline. Three straight plays. One was a hook and ladder. But regardless, three straight plays to the sideline. You see all of the 49ers defensive players arrayed along the sideline. So there's the quarterback draw. Slide starts at the 26. Finishes inside the 20. Tick, 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 tick. And all of this that happened, the chaos that ensued, the ball didn't get spiked before the clock hit triple zeros. And it really is, I wrote something about it today on PFT, and I tried to identify all the different ways the Cowboys screwed it up. It was a total failure of coaching and execution. And really, the failures of execution reflect a failure of coaching. Because Mike McCarthy said they practice this every week. We're not practicing it very well if you practice it every week, and this is the outcome. And Chris Sims made a great point today. Do they have somebody playing the role of the umpire who runs up and gets the ball and spots it? Because that was the biggest flaw. They needed to roll the red carpet out for that guy so he could get through to spot the ball. And they were blocking him from doing the thing that he had to do before they could snap the ball. That, to me, was the most glaring failure of all of this, not creating a path for the umpire to do his part of the job that was critical to the ball being snapped and spiked.
The refs did everything right here. And the first thing I tweeted about this play was I had no problem with the play call. Listen, if you wanted to throw two Hail Marys from the 41-yard line, you could have. Fine, if that's the way you wanted to go. But everyone's saying, why are you running in the middle of the field? They're running in the middle of the field because, as you can see, the outside is covered. I have a former NFL player that was in my house during the game on an offensive side of the ball, and he said, we had plays set up there where the quarterback either runs the middle or we run a slant route because the middle is open. You get about 10 yards, 12 yards. You slide, hit the dirt, get up, give the ball to the ref. That's what they practice. So that's why they ran it to the middle of the field. I had no problem with the play call. Dak ran a little too far, and he had to be more aware of how far he went to kill the time. And the one thing I tweeted, I said, does anybody watch the video of Larry Fitzgerald back in the day do this?
Yes.
And sure enough, I saw videos of it everywhere today. Larry Fitzgerald, not only when he caught the ball, his teammate would catch the ball. Larry would take the ball from his teammate, sprint it to the center, hand it to the center, and the center would hand it to the official. It was a well-oiled machine. The Cowboys couldn't have done it worse. Dak ran too far, took too much time that way, then gave the ball to the center. The center needed to find the ref who's coming up for pine, turn around and hand it to him and give him the space to spot the ball. This has been done many, many times. The execution by the players on the field was horrific. And you're right. If they said that they work on this during the week, then they obviously, maybe they get it right during the week. Like you get a lot of things during the week. But you know, when the lights are blazing brightly and there's not enough time on the clock or the clock is ticking down, well, sometimes you freak out a little bit. And they obviously did here. So blaming the ref was the cheap way out of this one. The refs were correct. The Cowboys coaches and players were wrong.
Hey, Mike, at a time when 25% of the league is currently looking for a new head coach and teams struggle with their effort to, especially when it comes to taking a coordinator and projecting that that coordinator is ready to be a head coach because it's such a different job. I think there are great head coaches in the NFL, and then there are everybody else. And the great head coaches have so much attention to detail. For example, the great head coaches will be aware of the Larry Fitzgerald habit and teach it to their players. They're always looking for anything that someone else does that works, and they'll steal it. There's nothing wrong with that. There's no copyright infringement in the NFL. No. You're constantly looking for something that someone else does that works, and you run it through your own personal filter, your preferences, your style. Could it work here? Yes or no? You're constantly doing it. You're consumed with that. Constantly looking and looking and looking for ways to make your team better. And apparently this never hit Mike McCarthy's radar screen, or he never bothered to think, this might be a good idea to tell my players when we're trying to run a two-minute offense and the clock is ticking away. And second, Mike, here's next-level stuff that I think the best coaches would have done. During that timeout, when the 49ers realized, maybe we should take a timeout here because we're not covering the sidelines and the Cowboys keep chipping it away and chipping it away. That's when, if you're Mike McCarthy, you find a way to subtly get to the umpire and tell him what's coming next. That happens. Umpires, officials, referees, they get told all the time, be on the lookout for something. You tell the umpire, you better be ready to get on your horse. Don't say, oh, bleep. Oh, he ran it. I can't believe he ran it. We're going to run it here. We're looking for you to get through and spot it. We're going to make a path for you to get through and spot. See, this just tells me.
Yeah.
Not, this wasn't on Mike McCarthy's radar screen. It's the kind of detail, if you want to take a playoff team and make it a Super Bowl winner, it's the kind of detail that you got to have as a head coach.
So, you know, Mike McCarthy obviously is going to feel the brunt of this. And you don't, I don't think he get fired over one play. But unfortunately, there's been a history with Mike McCarthy and clock management. It's just like Joe Judge. Joe Judge didn't get fired because he ran a quarterback sneak on 3rd and 9 off his old goal line. It was a culmination of things, and that may have been the straw. I don't know what's going to happen in Dallas with Mike McCarthy. But I'll say this, Mike, because I've said this consistently for as long as after being a player and then being on air. I don't put it all on the coach. These players are professional athletes, and they're supposed to know things as well. Now, would it be great that in that timeout, everything was discussed? See, I don't know what was discussed. Obviously, the play was, and you would think as part of it, what being discussed would be, you know, get the ball to the rep, whatever. But obviously the execution of it wasn't there. I don't know what was discussed, but I will not put all of it on Mike McCarthy, even though I know he's had issues with clock management and things like that. These are pro athletes who get paid and have been around a while. They need to know as well. They need to take some responsibility for this as well. So there's more than a few people that need to look in the mirror and say, yeah, you know what? That was partly on me.
Hey, and that's a fair comment because, look, it's not a one-man show. There are quarterbacks out there who will take charge in a situation like that, who understand the rules, who will insist that this is done correctly. Dak Prescott's got a vested interest in not wasting one of his opportunities to build a legacy as a winner. They've never made it past the divisional round with him. They haven't made it past the divisional round since 1995, for crying out loud. So, you know, think of how a Peyton Manning would handle a situation like that. He's going to understand all the permutations and requirements and what needs to be done. And if they're practicing it, I guarantee you, if they're practicing that play, Mike, without an umpire there, he's going to say to the head coach, you know what, we should probably do this next time with somebody playing the role of umpire so we can factor that in too. Because guys need to get out of his way. We need to be thinking about that. It makes me think of what Tony Dungy said about Super Bowl 41 in Miami. Peyton Manning obsessed with the weather report, constantly saying to Coach Dungy, we need to be practicing with wet balls. It's going to rain. And Coach is like, I have Florida. You know, it rains and it stops. It's no big deal. We'll be fine. And Peyton Manning kept on him and on him and on him until they did it, and it rained the whole damn game. So you're right. It's a total team. It is a team. Even though the coach is in charge, you got other players with functioning brains who can contribute to the cause, and you need to be willing, especially for a play like that they've been holding in their pocket, that this is their plan. They're not going to run an 8-yard slant. I talked to people today. What do you do here? Others are like, well, you know, you're running in, and you get up the line and you spike it. You gain 8 yards, and you got time. 14 seconds is more than enough time to pull that off. If this is your play that you work on all the time, you better be damn sure it's ready to go. And that's what concerns me. Total team, they weren't ready to go.
It's the most crucial part of this play, because you know you have the middle of the field. You know Dak's going to run free. If you ran a slant route, you know you're going to have a completion. The most crucial thing is, what do you do after you have the ball and hit the ground? No one hit the ground. Again, Dak ran too far. Know where your spot is, depending on the time that is left. Then the most important thing for all the other players is to get set, but give the ball to the official. Everybody knows you can't spot the ball. The official has to spot the ball. So if the official has to spot the ball, what do you need to do? Give him the damn ball. The play is not going anywhere until the official touches it. And everybody knows that. And they failed to execute that by putting it on the ground. So now the ref has to get through the line, touch the ball, reposition it, and you run out of time. Again, we're repeating ourselves now, but this is on the Cowboys. This is not on the officials.
But, Mike, there's been this not-so-subtle sense that the Cowboys are entitled to spot the ball on their own. That's not how it works. No. It's not the whole goal of the official. It's not some magical requirement that you've got to touch the ball. No, you take the ball and you put it in the right spot. That ball should have been back at the 26. You know, right. One of the things that slowed Dak Prescott down was the umpire tried to at least get it back in the direction of where it should have been, and it pushed everybody back. That was a half second that they lost there as well. But it was just a total failure. And here's the other side of it too. There's no guarantee they were going to score a touchdown there. All they lost was what, a 7% chance? I don't know. And Mike, I said this earlier today. Beyond the fact that Dak Prescott should have gone down at the 30 to conserve time, I'd rather run that play from the 30 than the 25. At the 30, I don't think they can flood the end zone with defenders. At the 25, I think they can. At the 30, they got to be worried about somebody getting the ball short of the end zone, hook and ladder, sprinting in or whatever. I don't want the ball on the 25 if I'm taking one shot at the end zone. I want it on the 30.
Yeah, and this is all about your best odds, right? And there are those that thought the best odds were two shots from the 41-yard line. You know, maybe you get a pass interference call. Well, let me just remind you, you're not getting a pass interference call on a Hail Mary in the end zone. I mean, so you couldn't believe what's going to happen in there. They're not calling a damn thing. So that would happen twice, and you may get an interception. So I would have rather done what they did. But if they ran two plays, so be it, from the 41, I'd have been fine with it. But this play, again, is getting lost in the shuffle that it was on the officials. It was on the Cowboys. You could run a decent play from the 30, the 28-yard line to try and get one in the end zone because you do have some tall receivers. It doesn't have to be just a ball lobbed up in the air. You can find a matchup or something that you want. But they didn't give themselves the opportunity. I know it was a small percentage, but a 7% chance is better than 0% chance, Mike, which is what they ended up with.
They got a great team on both sides of the ball, and they are, by all appearances, ready to go. Stephen Jones said today that Mike McCarthy absolutely will be back. I'm not a big fan of knee-jerk reactions either way. A knee-jerk reaction to say he's coming back or a knee-jerk reaction to say he's out. I think there's a deliberate process that needs to be followed. You look at the whole season. Is this coach taking us as far as he can? Can he take us farther? Is it time to elevate Kellen Moore? Is there someone else out there that is the person who is going to take us next level? I think these are all fair things they need to ask, and I'm not advocating for the guy to be fired.
Right.
I just think it's fair to have an objective assessment of 2 years of Mike McCarthy. Is the team where they expect it to be based upon the talent that the Jones family, with assistance from others in the front office, have amassed?
Yeah, you just have to – the one thing I say you be careful of is how much do you change, because, you know, unless you elevate Kellen Moore and keep the same system, I've said this over and over again, you change a head coach, you change coordinators, you change position coaches, you're changing everything. The way coaches coach their position, the style you're running on offense and defense, and the head coach mentality. So, and there's a lot of talent. We know there's a ton of talent on paper on this team. It's a reason the game's not played on paper, but they have talent to win right now. So that would be the one thing I might be wary of, is changing the offensive and defensive system.
Yeah, you know, I agree with you there. It may change anyway, though, if Dan Quinn gets a head coaching job and Kellen Moore goes somewhere else. I think that's one thing Jerry Jones is concerned about, losing Kellen Moore, and maybe they strike a deal where Moore hangs around until Mike McCarthy is gone, either by choice or not by choice. Let's go ahead and take a break. There are, as I mentioned, 8 vacancies in the National Football League. We'll give you all the latest on what's happening with those. 3 GM vacancies as well. We'll go over that next year on PFTPM.
Doers, mowing season is here with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329, during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
All right, PFTPM, 8 head coaching vacancies and counting, possibly, who knows, with the National Football League. 25% of the league looking for new coaches. No one hired yet. My understanding, Mike, everyone is taking their time this year, and I think that's good. That's wise. I think they should take their time. I'm going to be interested to see what happens once one team hires a guy. Is that going to get the dominoes falling faster than they should? I think these teams should take their time. They seem to be committed to it. There are issues with the timing. I don't like it when guys are being interviewed for a head coaching job when they still have work to do with their current job. It becomes an unavoidable distraction that consumes their life in a variety of ways. But this is the system that we have, Mike, and it's not going to change. It's not going to change. No. All we can hope for is that the individual teams choose to take their time.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, it is difficult to be interviewing because the interview process of people that don't know, I mean, you're sitting there for hours with the being interviewed. So, you know, and that's taking away, if you're still in the playoffs, a time to be preparing, because we know how coaches are. And I do hope they're patient, because this is such a 180 from the college game, where when they move the signing period from February to the early signing period in December, you know, that made colleges make changes even quicker. So you saw the Brian Kellys and Lincoln Rileys, you know, ditching really quick right after the season. And I get it, because they need to get to their new school before the early signing period in December. But it pushes the wheel a little too fast. It could screw things up. So patience is a lot better. But to your point, and you're right, because a lot of the same people, and you'll know this better than me, are being interviewed for a lot of the jobs. So where does the first domino fall? Who strikes the first deal? Is there, and I'd like to ask you, is there the one hot candidate that everybody is looking to hire first? I haven't got a feel for that. You would better than me. And everybody waiting maybe to see where that guy's goes before the dominoes start to fall.
Well, I think Brian Flores right now is the guy in the most demand, the former Dolphins coach. The Bears, the Texans, and the Giants are expected to interview him at some point as well. But he's committed to going very slowly, because he knows, after being fired, even though I don't think it was on him, by the Dolphins last week, he has to make a good choice this time. He has to know the people he's dealing with. He has to be very deliberate, and he has to be very careful. And if someone's pushing him to make a decision sooner than he wants to, fine. My decision is no. No, thank you. I'll go somewhere else. But, you know, it's like anything else, whether it's looking for a house, looking for a car. If there's a model that you want and you find out that it's just been sold off the showroom floor and there's another one that you like, what are you more likely to do, Mike? You're more likely to say, well, I already lost the first one I wanted. I ain't losing the second one.
Well, listen, and that's what happens. Again, I go to college and you go to the NFL. Sometimes the NFL, the team gets the third or fourth choice that they wanted, because, again, a lot of the same names are in the hat. And this was always been the amazing thing to me, Mike, is – you know, last year when all these coordinators were hired, they were all coordinators, first-time head coaches, save for Urban Meyer, who was a head coach in college, and we see how that turned out. But they were all coordinators, and everybody was kind of grading, oh, this guy's going to do this or that. And I remember being asked, and I said, how the hell do we know? You know, they were part of a company where they ran one department, the offensive side or the defensive side or the special teams. And then the next day you're hiring them, and they are sitting in the big chair where – they're answering every question. Hey, coach, what kind of toilet paper should be in the bathrooms? I mean, every single question now is coming to them, something they never had to deal with before. So they can prepare for it all they want. They can have their list of coaches that they want to bring in, but we have no idea how they're going to react when they become a head coach. The best coordinator I ever played for was Bud Carson. When Bud Carson, I even had talks with him when he became a head coach, he just said, you know, it just wasn't for him. It didn't work. He was a better coordinator. But when you're a great coordinator, you're going to get a chance to be a head coach, but it's still a crapshoot of how you're going to be when you become the CEO of that team and sit in the big chair. So that, to me, has always been a very interesting thing. It looks like he's going to fit, like, it's going to fit really well with this team. But then you get there and you're like, wow, I wonder why that didn't work. Sometimes, you know, you just don't know.
That's the challenge. That's the projection that teams have to make, especially for guys who have never been head coaches. Great coordinator. Will he be a great coach? Tony Dungy tells a great story. When he became the coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, somebody came to his office and said, when we play wherever it was in the preseason, what hotel do you want to stay in? He said, why are you asking me? Well, you're the head coach. It's your decision. You know, so just one small example of how dramatically different the existence is when you become an NFL head coach. Rich Bisaccia has had a chance this year, 12 games in the regular season, one in the postseason, to show what he can do. There's a feeling within the locker room that they want Bisaccia to be the guy. Here he is from today asking if he's had conversations with team owner Mark Davis about the possibility of Bisaccia winning the permanent job.
Mark and I have had some conversations. There's due process. He has to interview some other candidates, as I well know. I'm very respectful of the process, what it's supposed to look like and how it's supposed to work. And I think we'll be in constant conversation, and we'll certainly talk again before the week is over.
Hey, Rich, Tashawn Reed from The Athletic. Obviously, you know, you didn't expect to be, you know, in a head coaching role coming into this season. What did you learn just from that overall experience, just about yourself as a coach, and how did you kind of grow throughout this experience during the season?
Yeah, wow. I guess I learned that I could do the job. You know, I learned that I could have conversations with other coaches to figure out how to possibly win a game and still keep the same role that I had, where you can build relationship with players and still do the job that I started off with. So I can see now how offensive coordinators can get a head job and still call plays, and defense coordinators get a head job and still call plays. So I kind of learned that about myself as well. So I'll leave it at that.
And he leaves his resume at 7-5 in the regular season with a playoff game. And the sense on Saturday was he keeps it close or wins at Cincinnati, he may end up with the job. Well, Mike, he kept it close. He kept it close. Nothing to be ashamed of. And I just think the fact that you got so many people in that organization that want him, it makes it awkward, to say the least, for the next guy to come in. I don't know that I would want that job right now. I don't know that I want to follow the guy that everybody wants, puts more pressure on me as his replacement to get everyone on the same page right out of the gates.
You know, there's a couple of ways to go. How much do you listen to players in this? The players love the guy. I mean, he's a very well-liked coach. But then also, in the next year or two, how many of those players are even going to be there? We know what the turnover rate is in the NFL. But I, you know, given all that went on there, I thought he did a good job to close the season with the 4 wins to get to the playoffs. And then again, while I thought Cincinnati definitely outplayed them, they were right there. They kept great drive at the end of the half to get within a score, and then they kept it close in the second half. They really got screwed a bit on the inadvertent whistle. That play should have been dead on one of the Cincinnati touchdowns that didn't help them, obviously. So sometimes, Mike, the decision can be so easy you don't make it, where it's right in front of you and you think you need to go get somebody who you think is going to be better or a bigger name, when maybe you just kind of keep flowing with Rich and going. He has the the backing of the players. It's a team that has a lot of talent, certainly needs some pieces to fill, and see where you can go. But again, sometimes I you sit there and you say, well, maybe we should just keep him. And you almost outthink yourself, thinking that you should be trying to find somebody better.
Hey, you put it best last Monday that same way, and I gave you credit for it so many times last week. If you had a nickel for every time that I had said it, you'd probably have about 45 cents. But still, that's 45 cents for doing nothing. But you said it, and it was great. The morning after that epic Raiders-Chargers game, sometimes the answer is right in front of your face. And with Mark Davis, and this is one of the things I love about the NFL, multi-billion-dollar organizations from a football perspective run by a monarchy. Where, how did I end up getting the team? Well, my dad bought it. My dad was the owner. And when he died, I got it. Well, what qualifications do you otherwise have to own and operate an NFL team? Absolutely none. Thank you very much. Now let me get back to my football team. And that creates an element of unpredictability in all this. On top of everything else, Mike, the Raiders have requested permission to speak to Gerard Mayo, the Patriots inside linebackers coach. Good. Hey, do your search.
Yeah.
They've also requested permission to speak to Dave Ziegler from the Patriots front office and Ed Dodds, the assistant GM of the Indianapolis Colts. Now, the last time I checked, Mike Mayock's still the general manager. So I don't know what this is. I don't know if Mark Davis has kind of discovered plutonium by accident here, where teams will actually begin interviewing coaches before deciding to keep the coach they have. Are you kidding me? Unless Mike Mayock's secretly been fired, and we've sent the Raiders PR department a request for explanation here, and I've asked the NFL, what's this all about? You can go out and just interview guys when you still have your general manager. You didn't fire Mike Mayock. He's there. He's not the interim guy. So this is just some of the stuff that you get sometimes when you're dealing with an NFL team run by a guy who has done and will do some unpredictable things, Mike.
Well, listen, we know the Davis family has always been a hands-on family. I mean, so that's not shocking at all. So I would hope, Mike, in this situation, and again, we don't know, that Mark and Mike Mayock have had some kind of discussion. If they haven't, shame on Mark. I mean, you've got to, and again, I don't know. I'm hoping, I'm such a big fan of communication. It really works when you sit down and talk to somebody, at least know what page everybody's on going forward, because you're right. When all of a sudden you're talking to management personnel and you have a management person in place already, what's going on? So I really hope Mark and Mike have had a sit down and a discussion on what direction they're going to know. So Mike isn't just kind of flailing in the wind. Then they're going to make a decision on a coach before they know what they're doing with the general manager, if it's not going to be Mike.
Yeah, it really is a strange situation. And I know, look, Mayock was the guy that was hired by Gruden. So Gruden's gone. So maybe Mark Davis is just saying, I got to take a step back and I got to evaluate everything. And maybe he wants to keep a bird in the hand. Maybe that's it. Maybe I want to reserve the right to keep Mike Mayock as my general manager, but I want to see who else is out there. Because if I change coaches, I may have to change general managers. New coach may want a new GM. And if I want to have a team that's going to work well together, I want to do that. So regardless, it would be helpful for Mark Davis to at least let everyone know what he's thinking of, because it's confusing when these things just kind of happen. We're waiting for something to happen for Eric Bieniemy, although he can't be hired yet since the Chiefs won 42-21 last night over the Steelers. 8 vacancies, Bieniemy now 3 cycles of getting interviews, and I spent a lot of time trying to figure out why he hasn't gotten a job yet, Mike. The narrative that we hear from time to time that Eric Bieniemy is a bad interview, I've been told by multiple people, is crap. It's a lie. It's not the truth. He interviews well. It gets back to the projection we were talking about a few minutes ago. You have to be comfortable making the bet that a guy who's been a great coordinator is going to be a great head coach. No team yet has been comfortable making that bet. There's a sense that in this cycle, someone will. There's enough people with the Chiefs who are pushing and pushing and pushing for Eric Bieniemy that it's going to catch. It's going to take root, and someone's going to say, we got to give this guy a shot.
So, and again, you know, what you said there, I'm sure others may have been thinking, because there have been some minorities hired, you know, while Eric was going through these cycles. So there was a thought, you know, well, was it the interview process? Was something wrong there? So I'm glad you have heard from people that, you know, that is crap and that he interviews extremely well. So then you really kind of shake your head. Do you think maybe Matt Nagy being on that staff, but Andy Reid being the man with, you know, behind, you know, the plans and the play calling and such, that hurts those under them? I mean, I had that in Philly. Now, we eventually got a job. Buddy Ryan was our head coach. Jeff Fisher was our D coordinator, but we knew Buddy was the defensive guy. You know, Jeff did eventually get a head coaching job. So you wonder, does the Matt Nagy not working in Chicago work against Eric Bieniemy in any way? I don't know.
Oh, and I think that's definitely a factor. And it's more so the fact that it's an offensive coordinator working for an offensive head coach who's clearly involved with the offense. But somebody rolled the dice on Doug Peterson and won a Super Bowl. Somebody rolled the dice on Matt Nagy, and he was coach of the year his first year. And it's not a question of, do we know he's going to work out? The question is, what distinguishes some who get chances from others who don't? And let's go ahead at some point and give this guy a chance. You know, Brian Flores has proven he can do it. The projection isn't there for him. That's why he's so in demand. It's hard to find, when you're looking for that coach, somebody that you have a high degree of confidence can do it. And I'd like to think there's enough people from the Chiefs organization who are privately saying, this guy's ready, this guy's ready, this guy's ready, that someone's going to believe it. You know, I look at the Vikings. He was there for 5 years. He was running backs coach when they drafted Adrian Peterson. He was in that position when they almost made it to the Super Bowl in the first Brett Favre year. He was assistant head coach in 2010. Now, that was the year they fired Brad Childress during the season. But the Vikings know him. The Vikings know him as well as anybody, better than anybody who's looking for a coach right now. And I've heard his name mentioned there. I mean, they at least don't have to – rely on the same due diligence others do. They've employed him for 5 years.
Well, and God knows if the Vikings had had enough offensive coordinators over the last few years, the way Zimmer was going through them. And boy, what a gig to get. I mean, you're being handed, you know, two incredible receivers and a great running back. And you probably have Kirk Cousins there because, again, you may know this better than me. Who's picking up a $35 million tab unless they wanted to trade him and pick up a lot of the tab to the team he goes to? So that's going to kind of be your battery of quarterback, running back, and receivers. And it's a pretty damn good one.
Yeah, and just one of the many jobs that is still out there as the process grinds a little more slowly than it has in the past. Of course, as I say that, you know what's going to happen. Before the show ends, somebody's going to hire someone, right? Yeah. The moment we fully let our guard down is the moment three jobs will be filled by the time we go to bed. Let's put this segment to bed. We've got all the updates on every move that's happening on the coaching carousel and the GM searches at ProFootballTalk.com. Play some fill in the blank when this Monday edition of PFTPM continues right after this.
With spring Black Friday deals at the Home Depot, you can give your lawn or garden beds a pop of color and protection. Right now, get a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10. Help your soil retain moisture longer with color that lasts up to 12 months. Shop spring Black Friday deals for a special buy on Scott's Earth Grow Mulch, 5 bags for just $10 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. Color selection varies by store. Limit 60 bags per customer while supplies last.
Like chocolate cake, and you eat a piece, and then you have one dangled in front of your face. You're probably gonna want to eat that too. Not much is gonna stop you. So, I mean, that's how you feel about the Super Bowl. I mean, that is the chocolate cake with the ultimate frosting, you're gonna try to go get it if you can. You know, that's the best you can.
Andy Reid guaranteeing that if I could get off my hill tonight, but for the snow, I would go find some chocolate cake somewhere. A little cheeseburger, a little chocolate cake, a little football tonight between the Rams and Cardinals. We're going to do some fill in the blank. And, Mike, some of these are very, very broad, so they can go any direction you want. For example, the Chiefs blank.
The Chiefs look like the Chiefs of old. I mean, again, no points in the first quarter. Zip, zip. Pittsburgh was doing exactly what they had to do to win the game. Defense was playing well, and then the defense has scored the first points of the game for them. But then 35 points were scored in the second and third quarter by the Chiefs. And they didn't need that many because Pittsburgh can't score that many points. But that's what I would say. They look like the Chiefs that we're used to.
Yeah, I mean, I guess to borrow the quote from Juju Smith-Schuster as he was talking about a division rival last year, the Chiefs is the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Because they are. And the thing that amazes me about them, the character of the players, the character of the coaching staff, the refusal to panic, when it feels like it's a night that is going to go along with the narrative of total team effort by the Steelers, no rhyme or reason as to how in the hell they would win that game. It was all going their way. 7-0 after the punts and punts and punts and punts. And it would have been very easy to adapt to the circumstances if you're the Chiefs and just accept the fact that it's not your night. And then to the hell with that. First drive after that, touchdown. Then they stop the Steelers. Next drive, touchdown. And the route was on. And that's what's so dangerous about the Chiefs, Mike. There was a game a couple of years ago that is so indicative of the Chiefs. It was a Raiders game early in the season, like week two of the 2019 season. Final score was 28-10. The Chiefs scored all their points in the second quarter. Yeah. Like, they've got that ability to drop the hammer and score a bunch of points anytime they want.
Yeah, they can knock you out. That's when they'll rope-a-dope you, right? First quarter, no points, give up 7 on defense, and then they'll drop the hammer on you and knock you out and put you in a position where you are now completely out of your game plan and have to throw yourself back into this game. So, you know, there were a few teams. They were that team. Buffalo was that team, you know, that just – weren't looking like what we thought they were going to be, but they both seem to be righting the ship when it needs it the most, and that's in the playoffs. And now we get that great matchup this week.
Well, the Chiefs were that basketball team that was down 6 points in the second half and goes on an 18-2 run that you knew right. Was coming at some point. That's what they are. The Bills, in contrast, on Saturday night were the Harlem Globetrotters. and the Patriots were the Washington Generals. And that's our next topic in fill in the blank. The Bills offense against the Patriots, what?
Was surprising to me, no contest. Because I've said this before, the reason that New England was winning the way they were was, to me, their defense. Everybody talked about Mac Jones, who was coming along well as a rookie, but the defense put the offense in position to never have to really throw themselves back into games. They were always winning, or it was very, very close. And that was on the defense. When it got pushed to be on Mac Jones' shoulder, we'd seen multiple interceptions in back-to-back weeks, multiple interceptions yesterday. They got taken out of their in their game this weekend. They got taken out of their game plan. So to me, it was surprisingly, and I put surprisingly in there because I've loved this New England defense, surprisingly a no contest.
Oh, you know, Mike, from the first drive, when Josh Allen throws the Joe Montana to Dawson Knox playing the role of Dwight Clark in the back of the end zone, and just like Montana, Allen thought he was throwing it away. For me, the moment, though, when Micah Hyde makes that shot out of a cannon interception on a play that I thought was a touchdown, and the Bills just keep going, just going. It's never happened before. If you haven't heard it, and even if you have, just let it sink in. It's never happened in the history of the National Football League, regular season or postseason, that a team on offense, every time it had the ball, scored a touchdown or took a knee in victory formation. No interceptions, no punts, no field goals, no turnovers on downs. Touchdown or kneel down. And it happened against the guy who is the consensus greatest NFL coach of all time. It's inconceivable, Mike.
And if there was ever a time where Sean McDermott was not going to pick his foot up off the throat of an opponent, it was this game. He was just going to keep going and pushing and pushing and scoring. And because he knows what he's up against here, and you have that opportunity to stunt on this team, man, you do it. And that's exactly what he did. So the Bills, to me, just like the Chiefs, again, looked like what we thought they were going to be. This was a team that statistically, offensively, and defensively were in, what, the top five, top ten, one of the only teams to be doing that. But they didn't look like that all year. Well, they looked like it in this game. That's why everybody was hoping this game would be the AFC Championship game between them and Kansas City. Well, we get it a week early.
Last topic, the officiating in the wild card round, blank.
I mean, I probably would use a word that might get us in trouble from the FCC. So I'll just say horrific. I mean, when you get a game, the game I did, where immediately after the Cincinnati and the Raiders game, it basically comes out that group, that officiating crew, isn't doing any more playoff games. I mean, it was that bad. And, yeah, we've seen some very, very – penalties have been up this year. I'm not a big fan of that, but, yeah, it's been pretty spotty.
And you know what? We're not on any over-the-air network. Not that I want to encourage you to use any of that language, but it's Peacock. And I've heard plenty of bad language on Peacock, and it's Sirius. I've heard plenty of bad language on Sirius, too. I'm going to call it Orwellian, Mike. That was the lead of the item that I wrote on Saturday night. Once we saw the pool report from Walt Anderson, I said 2 + 2 really is 5, because that's what they want us to believe. The erroneous whistle, the official explanation from the NFL, the crew discussed it, and they determined that the whistle came after the catch was made in the end zone for a touchdown. Well, why do we even care if it was an erroneous whistle then if it came after the catch? But that's what they want us to believe. It's a little gaslighting. It's a little 1984. It's a lot of bull crap that we're being fed by the NFL on this, all because they didn't want to admit that they got it wrong and they should have had a do-over of the play. That's their rule. You may not like the rule, but when the whistle blows accidentally before the play is over, the rule is you do the play again. Doesn't matter what the outcome of the play is. I don't like that. It shouldn't happen, but right. It did. They just disregard the rule book, and they go with the outcome on the field. And, of course, Raiders fans are justifiably upset about it.
At times, what do they think? We're idiots? I mean, I was there at that game. Right after he released the ball, you heard the whistle. I mean, we're not morons out here to try and say, oh, yeah, okay, I guess it was after he caught the ball. Give me a break. I mean, that was a joke. I will say this, though, Mike. The play absolutely should have been called dead and come back. But I will also say, to me, it did not affect the outcome of the play.
Didn't matter. But that's not the rule. That's not the rule.
Exactly,
that's the problem.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly right. Yes.
But here's why they're able to get past it, Mike. There's always another bright, shiny object to attract our attention, including tonight, Monday Night Wild Card Game, Cardinals at Rams. We're getting ready for that next here on PFTPM. Tonight's the night, round three between the Cardinals and the Rams. The team split in the regular season, each winning in the other team's building. The Rams are 3.5-point favorites. You know, before this year, the Rams went 8 straight games, obliterating the Cardinals. This year, different story. Both games, close. Obviously, Cardinals won the first one. The second one, the Monday night in December, Aaron Donald was a wrecking crew. Literally start and finish, sacks to begin the game and end the game. This one should be a great one, and it's a ton of pressure on the Rams and Matthew Stafford, because if they lose this one, why did you trade Jared Goff for basically Jared Goff?
Yeah, listen, we've all made the casino jokes of pushing their chips into the middle and everybody else's chips. I mean, this is what they did, and if that's the route they want to go, listen, that's fine, but you better get the payoff. And this is where we are now. This game, to me, Mike, it's a head-scratcher. For a while, I called Arizona the best team in football, and then 1 week on our show, I said they're swirling down the drain. And then they beat the Cowboys the way they beat the Cowboys. For the Rams, which Stafford shows up, the 41-touchdown Stafford or the 17-interception where they're usually going for a pick six the other way? Which defense? I mean, that defense by name alone with the Rams is unbelievable, but they've been a bit inconsistent as well. So, to me, I look for an X factor. Is J.J. Watt going to be an X factor for the Cardinals coming back? How about for the Rams? Eric Weddle hasn't played a game in, 750 days? And he's coming back? I have no idea what to expect there, but I'll say this, Mike. An X factor to me is a guy who did play in Week 18 coming back from the Achilles and had a little more. Now he's had a little more practice and got to knock some of the rust off. I'm interested to see what Cam Akers does out of the backfield. They got Michelle Soni, who was great receiving out of the backfield. What will Cam do, running the ball or catching the ball? I think that's going to be real, real interesting for the Rams.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think they deliberately went easy with him in Week 18, getting themselves to the point where they were confident that despite the torn Achilles in July, just before camp opened, he'd be good to go. That's the presence that can give balance to the offense and take pressure off of Matthew Stafford. Think about all of his time in Detroit. He never had a great running back. Reggie Bush was the closest he had in all those years. And the kid from Cal, Javid Best, looked like he was going to be really good. And before he suffered the concussion week 5 of the 2011 season, he was giving that team real promise. That's what Stafford's never had. If they feed Cam Akers, if he can move the chains, that can be the real X factor. I'm glad you mentioned him, because Matthew Stafford needs somebody to take the pressure off, because he can say all he wants. He's not feeling the pressure. Baloney! He's feeling the pressure. The whole team is riding on him. The trade is riding on him. 8 picks and 8 touchdowns and 8 interceptions the last 4 games. That's not good enough. He's got to show up tonight, and having a strong running game could help him do that.
You know, and then on the Cardinals side, I've been saying this all year. I think Kyler Murray has to run more. Not a ton more, but when Josh Allen started running more in Buffalo, and he averaged, 11 yards on 6 carries in that game, which really wasn't a game against New England, but when he started being more dangerous running, that team reverted back to what we expected. And I think Kyler Murray's got to do that a little more as well. And we'll talk about the offensive side, but understand defensive side of the ball has pride. That Arizona defense knows the Jalen Ramseys, the Aaron Donald, the Von Miller, the names they have on that defense for the Rams and the popularity they are. They're like, wait a minute. We think we're pretty good, too. They had 41 sacks on the year. Chandler Jones, over 10 sacks for the year for them. So they want to prove something out there as well, you know, to try and get the job done. And let's see if they can work the Rams into some turnovers, because we know Stafford's given a few up.
One last thing about the Cardinals offense from my perspective. Not having DeAndre Hopkins makes a huge difference, because whether he's being fed the ball or he's just there and you have to account for him, it's made it easier to defend the Cardinals offense. This is a team that has taken a huge dive from 10-2. They had that win over the Cowboys. Was that the aberration? Because then they lost at home with the opportunity to win the division on the line. They lost at home to a Seahawks team that was playing for nothing. They finished their home schedule with 5 straight losses. A team that was 10-2. Mike, I really have concerns. I hope it's a great game. I hope it's a close game. We had to suffer through a couple of stinkers this weekend. I hope it's a close, exciting game. I don't know who's going to win. I think the Rams ultimately pull it out, though.
My X factor quickly for the Cardinals, Zach Ertz. Tight end, man. Trustworthy tight end to make some big plays, especially in the red zone.
All right. Hey, Mike, great seeing you as always. Thanks to all of you for some of your time. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll break it down bright and early tomorrow morning on PFT Live. awesome.
No!
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329, during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.